The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday evening, December 21st, 2014. Live from the WTVB studios in West Babylon, Long Island. I am Gary Harding, and with me, of course, is John Panarese. In the first half hour, we have an interview that was pre-recorded on Wednesday afternoon with Mike Doc Emmerich of the NBC Sports Network. Doc, of course, one of the most famous voices in broadcasting of NHL hockey. It was a great chance for John and I, a great treat, a little Christmas treat for us to get to talk to him. And in the second half hour of the show, we're gonna hear from Shannon Hogan, the pre and post game host on the Islanders MSG broadcast network. A very interesting second half hour to get to know a little bit about Shannon, and especially talk about her return to her home city on Friday night as the Islanders, of course, beat the Detroit Red Wings at the Joe Louis Arena Friday night, and of course that. A crazy minute and 58 seconds where it went from a 1-0 deficit to a 3-1 win. John, I'm sure you were out, I think you said, right? Yeah. You were out Christmas shopping, so you didn't get to see it. But I'll tell you something. I don't know how much my heart is going to be able to take these victories. I'm sitting in the seat, and Claire and I looking at each other and going, I don't know if we're going to get this. You know, it was scary. And then all of a sudden, JT scores to make it 1-1 with 3 minutes left. And right just after they were, you know, the crowd was screaming, yes, 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 there was a little bit of a confrontation on the ice, in the stands right behind the Tampa Bay bench. And we see all the yellow shirts of the security guards going down one of the sections. And we're looking to see what's going on. And by the time we look up, all of a sudden the puck's behind the Tampa goaltender again, and we got a 2-1 lead. So we never even saw the game-winning goal.
It was 12 seconds, I think.
12 seconds later, a great, great deflection by Anders Lee off a Travis Hamonic shot, and the place went into bedlam. I mean, it was almost like going to the Stanley Cup Finals and hugging, you know, the person sitting next to you who you never met in your life until that afternoon or that night. You know, it's very surreal, you know, having to witness this last year. 23-10, the most number of wins in the NHL right now. I mean, obviously, looking at the NHL scoreboard right now, Chicago is winning 2-0 on Toronto. So if they obviously win tonight, they're going to have their 23rd win of the season. But again, we were the first to get there, and no Islander team has ever gone this far into the early into the season with 46 points. You know, I mean, what can you say, John?
It's just it's amazing. I was saying to my cousin Ralph, this team is fun to watch right now, and it just you just can't believe they come back and they win these games, and it's like, okay, who's going to be the hero this time? How's it going to happen this time? And it happens.
Yeah, and it's not just – and again, you think about it. They're winning all these games with JT and Kyle Poso far from their best.
Yeah, and that's what's startling to me is that the two of those guys are just, you know, not that they're having bad seasons, but they're not dominating.
They're not having a Poso and Tavares like seasons.
No.
So they're relying on guys again, you know, we call it the kid line, but obviously 2/3 of that kid line are older than John Tavares.
Right.
So, but you look at Anders Lee and Brock Nelson. Brock Nelson's on a 35 goal pace right now. I mean, everybody was, you know, most pundits were expecting that to happen, you know, and eventually it is, and it's making Garth shine like a star for selecting him at the end of that first round with JT.
Right.
And Anders Lee, you know, you don't know necessarily what you're going to expect from these college players, especially guys coming from the Midwest, coming from Notre Dame, and he's turned into the real deal. And Strom leading the team in plus-minus, I think it's a plus-12 now.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, it's exactly what you were expecting from them, and they're coming in at the right time. And again, you can say everything you want about the kid line, but to me, what line still impresses me, and you see them out there with 2.5, 3 minutes left, is that Casey Zizekas, Cal Clutterbuck, Matt Martin, fourth line. They're able to run all four in all situations. I mean, yeah, they had a power play goal a couple, you know, I think it was one of the games last week. But you could put them out there at any time and not be worried, you know, if the opposing team has their top line out there. They're stifling them. They're doing everything they need to do. And now this team is playing finally for the first time all season with their main six defensemen.
Right, right.
You know, obviously there are some issues. You know, number one, people will tell you the power play is definitely going for the cute goal instead of playing for the simple.
They've got to shoot.
Well, you're right. Everybody's saying they have to shoot, but they had 48 shots last night.
Well, they got to make smarts. I mean, you know, I like the Chicago philosophy, Quenneville. Basically, their philosophy is just get the puck back to the points, let the points blast away, and let good things happen in front of the net.
Exactly. But also, if you watch their power play, their feet are constantly moving.
Yes.
And that's a problem. I mean, it looks like you got five passengers out of there on the ice when the Islanders are playing the power play
right. Sometimes.
And all they're doing is just making those cute little fancy passes, and it just doesn't seem to want to connect. But you know what? Let's be happy about it.
Right.
We're coming to Christmas. We got a big matchup on Tuesday night against the Montreal Canadiens. And right now this team is second in the Eastern Conference. We're 2 points behind Pittsburgh, who, of course, has a game in hand on the Islanders. But you got to be happy with where we are. And I know Jake Brown, our other co-host tonight on the 9 o'clock hour, put a post up on Facebook and said, who's the best team in New York right now? Duh. And I could say it right now and be damn proud of it. But anyway, we want to get to the interview that John and I did on Wednesday afternoon. And we were very happy to work the phones and get everything set up so that we could get Doc Emrick. We got him on Wednesday afternoon when he was up in Minnesota doing the Boston Bruins Minnesota Wild game. So we got to talk on a couple of subjects. I was going to talk a little more Islanders, but we got into some interesting conversation, and we definitely hope you enjoy the interview with Mike Doc Emrick, and we're going to put it on right now, Brian, if you don't mind.
Okay, we're back on Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday night, December 20th, 2014. Gary Harding and John Panarese with you, and our guest this evening has definitely a lot of credentials in the New York area as well as all around the hockey world, is the voice of the NHL Sports Network and the Olympics and you name it. Doc Emrick has done it. Doc Emrick, it's Gary and John on WGBB on Long Island. Good evening, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks very much. It's good to talk to you two guys, and I can speak for myself. And as far as I know right now, I do not have the mumps, though I am in Minnesota, and I hope you guys don't either.
No. I think we've got our shots, Doc, and I think we're all pretty good. So speaking of being in Minnesota as we're taping this a couple of days before our show, you were mentioning the rivalry night tonight between the Bruins and the Minnesota Wild. It looks like it's going to be a very interesting evening, as you said, Matt Cook facing some of his former friends in Boston.
Yeah, he might be back for the game. It's an if. We don't get to talk to the coach right away and on game day here. And so we don't know about Matt, but if so, I'm sure there'll be a few Bruins that will say hello to him just because he's well-known in Boston for Mark Savard not playing anymore. But at any rate, it does look like it's going. It's not one of those rivalries like Pittsburgh-Philly that has a recent memory bank of lots of feistiness, but it could turn into that because both these teams are really needful of a win. The Bruins have only won 1 in 7 games.
So
right,
just
through
continuing
all the injuries.
Exactly. I mean, just continuing on the thought of, interesting things and surprises going on. What do you see in your, so far the 30 games, 40% of the season almost gone right now? Is maybe just the one big surprise that you've seen and the one big disappointment you've seen so far this season?
I guess the one big surprise in the West would be Calgary. And then the other thing that you have to say is, okay, they've dropped six now. And we seem to go in sixes in this league. And I think the Bruins are looking for six wins. That would put them right back up near the top if they could string out anything in a row, because getting any kind of long streak is very hard to do, seemingly in the NHL anymore. But Calgary was my positive surprise, and now maybe I jumped a little over, and maybe they are coming back to earth because some teams are starting to figure them out. But my one positive surprise continues to stay in the Eastern Conference, and that's the team at Nassau Coliseum. I'm just heartened to see what's been going on there and so glad to see they're up near the top, because these points, as you know, become very hard to get in March when everybody else is desperate to get them. And if you can rack up some points and pull away from third place, because third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh are going to be pretty tight all the way into April, I think, in the Metropolitan. But if you can stay up there with Pittsburgh, you're going to be laughing by the time you get to March, and you won't have the same pressure the other teams will. But the Islanders are wonderfully positive in the first part of this season for me.
What are your thoughts on the other two local teams here? Obviously, Gary and I are on Long Island, but what about the Rangers, and the Devils, and their Devils post Brodeur, and the Rangers after having made it all the way to the Cup last year?
Yeah, I don't think the Rangers have any kind of a Cup hangover from that short summer. I mean, it's the worst that you can have because you get to the finals and then you lose, and you have the same short summer that the guys did that have the Cup the rest of the summer to take around to their parties. But the thing that I think that the Rangers have is they are one of several teams that are in a cluster and probably will still be there. I don't know if they're their strength team defensively, because they've lost McDonough for so long, whether their team defense is going to be strong enough to get them into a secure position, or whether they're going to have to battle with the rest. And, you know, the difference between age and experience is whether it does something for you. And you looked at the Devils' lineup back in October, and it looked like it was going to be a very experienced one. But now you see that it's not paid off as they thought it would. And the one magical thing about all of this is that who would have thought the Florida Panthers would be one of these teams that we'd have in a playoff spot, as you and I are talking. And
right.
There would be other teams like Boston that would technically be out, and like New Jersey that looked like it had built – through a lot of the chaos of the summer, a pretty solid lineup is not. So
right.
The thing that we talked about with sixes, if the Devils were able to put together a six, they could be up with the rest of the pack and be competitive right to the end if they could continue to play well after that. The Rangers put together a six, they're up there with the Islanders. The Islanders put together a six, then they're maybe passing Pittsburgh, and they're really in the driver's seat. But a six is hard to come by.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
Speaking of the Florida Panthers, did you have any feelings about the poor guys that had to cover that 22-minute, 20-round shootout last night? I just happened to turn on NHL Network just as they put the shootout on, and I'm telling you, I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. How would you have felt if you had to cover a 20-round shootout?
I guess there would be different emotions. It would be with each touch of the puck, you would think, okay, this might be the one that ends it, and then you sink back into your chair and say, will this ever end? As a matter of fact, I'm glad you told me that it did end, because I was uncertain that it had. unbelievable. I guess what did they need Merrick Malik to do the through the leg shot some way or other and get this thing over with earlier? I don't know.
I mean, Bustad, who scored the winner, had a beautiful move on Holtby, and it looked like Holtby just, almost collapsed on the ice. But, I mean, just the fact that they had to actually go through all 18 skaters and then start again, with the guys taking two shots.
Yeah, I think that in terms of now it's not because of the 20 rounds that we had in that game that you're discussing, but I think part of the reason that we – If the league wants to go to 4-on-4 and then first stoppage after 3 or 4 minutes, then 3-on-3, and then a shootout if necessary. I think if we do that and we get to a shootout after they've tried 4-on-4 and 3-on-3, I think at that point we should invoke the TJ Oshie rule and after three shots, let guys repeat rather than going through all of the defensemen and the guys that never get to take a shot. And so they, other than at the end of practice, they've never had any experience at doing it, and it winds up prolonging it. Just roll Taves and Oshie out there if it's Chicago and St. Louis and let them see who can end the thing.
Exactly.
That's a good point.
I think that would probably provide even more thrills and excitement to people than going 20 rounds, because you would have the best guys out there that you could send out again and again and again until you got it decided. Now, mind you, out of the first 22 games that went to overtime in the American League, only four went to shootouts this year. And that was back in October at the very start, because they settled it 4-on-4 or 3-on-3, and it was about half and half. So that's my feeling, that we ought to go to that, not because I hate the shootout, but just because I think this does give a different kind of enthusiasm to a game as you go 4-on-4 to 3-on-3. You talked about edge of your seat. People really do move to the edge of their seats when they see that 3-on-3 starting.
Definitely. I think it would be fun.
It'd be worth a try, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and you wonder, though, if the NHL would ever do something like, and I definitely agree with the idea of the, you know, in the shootout, having guys being able to repeat after you get to the third person. I just think it makes more sense to just keep throwing the superstars out there. I mean, that's what the fans are paying to see.
Well, back in 05, John, now you tell me how you felt when you heard that the shootout was coming in. Were you glad about that, or were you not?
I have to admit, I had misgivings. You know, I was kind of a purist, an old school guy, and to me, the shootout just didn't seem like it was going to work in the NHL. But I've changed my mind about it in a lot of ways.
I've got to admit, I'm the same way. In that, I brushed it off as, you know, we settled the lockout, and to probably simplify it too much, the fans got the shootout. The players who had played 600 games got a hotel room to themselves instead of having to have roommates, and the owners got the rest. That's what happened in 05. What about you, Gary? Did you like the idea of a shootout when it first came out?
I was pretty much on the same fence. You know, I mean, I know Chris King on the Island, the broadcast, always talks about Jack Capuano talking about the skills contest, if you will. You know, that's been brought into the game. And I've talked to a bunch of friends that were season ticket holders in the AHL, and they love the idea of the 3-on-3. They are very excited with it. And as you said, it's cut down the shootouts significantly in the beginning. I don't know what it is the stats are as of now, but if it makes the object of the game to score the game-winning goal, in the middle of a play, I'm for it.
Yeah, and I think, too, that the purpose of all of this is to entertain hockey fans. That's the real reason for the regular season in hockey anyway, is to play 41 games in your home rink and entertain people. And I believe that making that attempt through a seven-minute overtime that's partly divided between 4-on-4 and 3-on-3 is an attempt to entertain them. And then if it needs to go to a shootout, especially if you allow repeat shooters, and maybe since we're pretending that we're the potentates of hockey, why don't we just say that you can put your best shooter out there and use him as often as you want rather than waiting for the first three to be done?
Well, I think another John approach. And I would definitely take Franz Nielsen.
Yeah.
Isn't that the truth? You know, we over in Sochi, we had them research the number of guys who had taken 40 shots and the top 5% guys, and almost all of them were at the Olympics. Oshie was one of them. Jonathan Toews was one of them. Nielsen was another. I'm trying to remember who the other two were. I think Pavel Datsyuk was one of them. But the best guys at taking the shots. And then, of course, Oshie winds up winning the marathon by going back and forth. And we were thinking the other day if Bobrovsky was somehow or other in the shootout, as he was in Detroit last night and won it, would Detroit be able to import Oshie in time to win one of these shootouts instead of lose so many of them? Because that would be one way to finish it off.
Well, Doc, we want to just change gears and just bring the last topic of conversation up. And it is concerning the upcoming Winter Classic on January 1st at Natchfield in D.C. I got to experience the game at Yankee Stadium with the Islanders and Rangers and thought it was a great experience, and I'm sure this is now, your sixth or seventh, I guess, January 1st game,
yeah,
if you will.
In terms of outdoor games,
it doesn't get old, does it?
No, it really doesn't. It's got an excitement all its own, and I think for fans it does, too. I go back to that first one that we had on NBC, which was Buffalo and Pittsburgh, and when we had overcast skies and the threat of snow in the first period, and then it became sleet in the second and snow in the third. Once the meteorologist came on and you saw that enormous white blob northwest on the radar of Buffalo, and you knew it was coming, I am just sure there were thousands of people on cell phones calling their friends and saying, you know what, you ought to look at this hockey game they're playing outdoors. It's going to get worse. And I think people have to treat this kind of like the construction site with the board fence outside and a hole in it so you can peek in. I think people enjoy watching how other people deal with adversity, including the athletes. And, of course, it had the storybook finish. It was comparable, I think, to Detroit and Toronto with all of the snow that was start to finish in Ann Arbor. And then we had a start to finish outdoor game that was part of the stadium series in Chicago between the Penguins and the Blackhawks last year. And it snowed. The heroes of the game besides the players were the guys with the shovels because they got a lot of work out, and I'm sure they slept well.
I'm sure they did. But I'm sure it always is fun covering the games, and I'm sure with the Capitals it's going to be interesting with Alexander Ovechkin back playing the Winter Classic again.
Yeah, he didn't mind. He really doesn't mind the spotlight, does he? I mean, for him. He likes that, and of course, some of the Blackhawks have excelled in these games anyway. So I think it'll be magnificent to watch, and it is, for us, we're going to be right down next to the penalty box against the glass, like we were in Ann Arbor. It's not the best place to see the game, but it sure is the best place to feel it, see the expressions of the players on their faces instead of way up in a heated press box, where you're so far away that a lot of times you just don't get the grasp of the sound. And I think that first one in Buffalo where there were 70,000 people there, when you saw the fire going up and the players marching down from the football locker room ramps and all of that atmosphere, it really does go right through you and makes you feel like you're a part of a special event. I think that's the attraction for people to pay the price of admission. And sit in seats where if they're down near the first base or third base side, they really can't see the players that well because the boards block the first 34, 36 inches of the player. But they do get to be a part of the experience as well as the people in the upper deck do. It might be the most distant place to watch baseball, but the upper deck or the monster seats at Fenway were an ideal place to watch a hockey game outdoors.
It definitely was. Well, listen, Doc, we thank you very much for your time. We know you got a very busy schedule. We hope you call a good game, and we want to wish you and your family a very pleasant holiday season and lots of luck with the rest of the year.
Yes, thank you so much. A great holiday to both of you and to your related families. And I think we're just fortunate that we have people in the armed services that keep us free and enable us to have leisure time to watch hockey games. And for some of us, like us three, to be a part of it and watch it for free. It's not bad, is it?
That's right. Nope, not bad at all.
Yeah, well,
good holiday.
I agree with that, Doc. All right, thank you very much again. And again, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, so that was a great interview.
That was that was awesome.
And again, just the fact that we're interviewing him, and he turns around and starts asking us.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's like he took over. Exactly. As I mentioned to John off air, I had a conversation with him a number of years ago, and he was actually watching a Pittsburgh Pirates game because he is a big, huge Pittsburgh fan going back to his youth. And we must have sat there for about 90 minutes, and from the first sentence that we started the conversation, he wrapped our entire talk back to that same sentence 90 minutes later. And it's just like, how the heck does he do things like that? It blew my mind away. And like I said, I'm sure there are a lot of people that don't appreciate his calling of the game or the way he talks about something, but to me, he keeps you engaged.
Yeah.
Yes, you're watching a hockey game, but he keeps you engaged into what's going on as well. You know, to me, I know he started out as a radio guy, and when you're a radio announcer as opposed to a TV announcer, you've got to talk the game. You have to describe the play. You've got to give the listener what's going on. You're kind of, hate to say it, John, he's kind of your eyes.
Right. No,
you know,
it's
to bring everything, to focus as to what's going on. And he brings that to TV, and not many people can do it.
And that's why I enjoy him so much, because he does get the descriptive, a bit more descriptive than a lot of other TV play-by-play guys do.
Exactly. So anyway, we're going to take a little break here. We're going to pay some bills and do a commercial. And then when we come back, we're going to have Shannon Hogan from MSG Plus to talk about the state of Islander hockey right now. So you're listening to Gary and John on WGBB 1240, Sports Talk 1240. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
Okay, and we're back to the second half hour of Sports Talk 1240 at 8. Right now at 8:28 p.m. This hour of the show is proudly sponsored by Country Foot Care of Mineola and East Williston. Country Foot Care provides highly personalized expert foot care on Long Island. In a fast-paced world, their experts understand the value of slowing down and pampering their patients, offering a convenient one-stop podiatric setting. From on-site diagnostic testing to their medical foot spa, what you need for your foot and ankle concerns is there. For more information and to check out Country Foot Care, you can go to their website at www.countryfootcare.com or call them at 516-741-3338. That's 516-741-FEET. And I've been a patient of theirs for over 20 years, and I definitely recommend them for anybody needing podiatric assistance. So, again, back to the Islanders here, 23-10. Right now, second in the conference. Who would have thought?
No, you know, I expected them to play better with the acquisitions in the offseason, but if anybody would have told me, you know, at December 21st where we'd be, I would have thought they were crazy.
And definitely, far ahead, as Jake was saying, the best team in New York right now, and that's a gimme. Just a little update on the NHL scoreboard right now. Carolina is losing to the Rangers 1-0 in the second period. Chicago 2-0 over Toronto. 1-1 in Boston against Buffalo. Dallas and Edmonton. Actually, Edmonton was up 5-1 at one point. It's now 5-5. So with 5 minutes left in the third period. And Colorado and Detroit finally got on the board. They are 1-1 with 3 minutes left in the third period. And our guest has arrived on the scene. So without any further ado, let's bring on the host of the pre- and post-game show on MSG Plus for the Islanders, Shannon Hogan. Shannon, it's Gary and John here on WGBB. Good evening and Merry Christmas in advance.
Merry Christmas, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, no problem. So the first thing we got to bring up to you, Shannon, we know you're from Detroit. We know you spent a number of years with the Red Wings. How did it feel going back to the Joe and not having to talk about the red and white, but the orange, blue, and white?
You know what? I was so excited. First of all, it was great because we had a few days off before we went to Detroit. So I actually went home and saw my family and friends. But when I walked into the Joe, it's this feeling of being so comfortable. And I joked with their guy that does the ice, Al Sabatka, and I was like, I swear if I was blindfolded and you walked me into any, you're like, we're just bringing you to any NHL arena, I would know I was in Joe Louis. It has a very distinctive smell. It's like going home. You're so comfortable. And it was great to see everybody. It was a little bit weird being in the visiting dressing room studio, I have to say.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I've only been in here when I was covering the CCHA when they close off the Red Wings side. So it was a little bit strange, but even our crew was laughing because I was kind of weaving my way underneath the stands, like, oh, you know where you're going? I'm like, yeah, that's what happens when you've been here for 4 years. But, you know, it was good to see Babcock. It was good to see some of the guys in the dressing room. And I feel like the ushers, they become like your family. You know, when you're at the same arena year in and year out, and, like, some of the older guys, they were like, oh, we thought you left us. And I was like, well, I kind of did. I'm in New York now, so that's the game. Like, you know, so there was a lot of hugs and hellos. And, you know, the game itself did not disappoint. I mean, those were two of the best teams in the league right now, and it was an exciting game to watch.
Right, and I know the way Butchie described it at the beginning of the game, he talked like you were having a parade as you were coming back.
They're so sweet. Like, you guys know how it is, though. You know, you become part of a family when you work with the team for a long time, and it's not just the players or the coaching staff. You know, it becomes the support staff around it. It's the trainers. It's, you know, the guys that work with equipment. It's all the ushers, you know. And Joe Louis is a place where people have been there a long time. A lot of the, you know, the people that work in hospitality there and security and the ushers and stuff, they've been there for 20 years. I mean, they've never not seen the Wings in the playoffs. So you get pretty comfortable with everybody. So it was good to go back and see everyone.
That's really nice. Now, Shannon, for fans out there, obviously this is your first season with the Islanders. Could you give us, like, maybe some background, you know, about yourself for the fans who are not familiar with you?
Yeah. So you mentioned Detroit. For the last 4 years, I was with Fox Sports Detroit, and Fox Sports is the regional out there that has the television rights to the Red Wings, Pistons, and Tigers. So I actually covered all three teams. Last year was one of those interesting years where I kind of started the season with the Red Wings on the road. Then I was over with the Pistons, back with the Red Wings, did the Winter Classic, you know, then did some Pistons studio. And then, you know, once the Wings went to the playoffs, back there. And then the next thing you know, you're out on the road with the Tigers as they kick off their season, which is long, as you know, for baseball fans. So I was there for 4 years. And then before that, I was 2 years in Salinas, California, which is on the Central Coast. It's about 30 minutes from Monterey, or if you're a golf fan, you're probably familiar with Pebble Beach.
It's a beautiful area.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And I was so spoiled with my first, you know, I call it my first big girl job out of college. I was the weekend sports anchor there, and then ended up being one of their news anchors as well. And it was great because it was such a unique, you know, market, and that you had, you know, some big sporting events with the U.S. Open in 2010, and then they have the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am every year. You have MotoGP at Monterey Laguna Seca. You kind of have the motorsport aspect. And then, bing, bang, boom, 2010, you've got the Giants in the World Series. So I kind of hit the jackpot for a small market television station and getting to cover some really good things on top of, you know, doing some high school sports, which I love, high school basketball and football. And then news, you know, they have a lot of wildfire action out there, and unfortunately, a pretty big crime issue with gang violence in Salinas. So it was a pretty, you know, overall great experience for my first job at a, you know, like a local television market, because you had to do it all. I mean, they would joke about me, you know, running to go cover the World Series, and I'm literally bringing the camera on the train with me, carrying the tripod, like, setting it up at the parade, flipping it around, trying to make sure my hair looks good. Everything's good, trying to get interviews by myself. And they're like, you just run around like it's a rat race. And I'm like, I know, but I love it. So, yeah, so I was there for 2 years. And then before that, I was at University of Missouri in Columbia, which is a fantastic journalism school. And if there are kids in high school out there listening tonight, I will tell you, if you want to do journalism, I'm going to put a plug in for Mizzou. Check it out. It was one of the best decisions of my life. And, Gary, I know you're going to ask me. So I was at Mizzou, and I was a college athlete. I was a swimmer at Mizzou.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that in a couple minutes. And then you come to a little place called Long Island after 4 years in Detroit. Just give us a little bit of a take on how I know from covering the team and stuff, you know, the Islander organization does, you know, a really good job with helping out with the media. Just describe a little bit about the the good relationship I think you certainly have had, you know, walking into this situation, strangely enough, with the last year of the Islanders.
Yeah, I mean, it really has been a dream. Even from the get-go, when I first got the job, media people are probably familiar with Kimber Auerbach, who does their all their media relations, and Jesse Eisenberg also helped out. You know, everything I needed about to know about the team, or you know, even to where I should live and what kind of restaurants to go to when my parents came to town, they were really great about that. And the people at MSG are unbelievable. I mean, I really was spoiled in Detroit with working with a fantastic crew. And anytime you go anywhere else new, you're thinking, oh, I hope this is good. And I could not have asked for better people around me that love the sport, know the sport, are familiar with the ins and outs of everything here on Long Island and in the New York area when it comes to TV and covering this team. So I really lucked out with just fantastic people around me. And then you throw in the fans, and I cannot say enough about how passionate this fan base is. And, you know, I had heard from other people around the league, you know, when the Islanders weren't having as good of seasons as they are now, that, you know, they really have diehard fans. And anytime I went anywhere on Long Island, I would see people wearing Islanders stuff. So I'm like, well, that's fantastic. You know, it would be so cool if the team was really great this year. And with all the moves they made in the offseason, I kind of had a feeling that it was moving in that direction. And I mean, from day one of the game opener, I was just like Johnny Boychuk, cracking up when he was saying that the fans woke him up at 8 o'clock because they were tailgating in the parking lot, and he just stayed at the Marriott. I could not believe when I got there how many people were there. I called my mom. I was like, you are not going to believe this. These fans are crazy, and they're there every night. It doesn't matter if it's a Tuesday game. They're there. So it's really been fantastic, and everybody's been so friendly on Long Island. Like, people come at the grocery store or at the gym, people say, you know, go Isles, or they'll do a little yes, yes, yes chant, and, you know, you can't help but smile at that.
Well, it's funny, Shannon. A couple of people have said to me, you know, she shows up from Detroit from a place where they win every year and make the playoffs every year, and all of a sudden we're starting to do good. So, you know, anybody said you correlate you with that success?
Don't jinx me, you guys.
No. As I told you last night when I introduced myself to you, I'm a fan just like you, so I'm not jinxing anything.
Yeah. No. You know what? Like I said, I've been lucky to cover good teams, but I think that the product out on the ice speaks for itself, and I'm just happy that I get to be a part of it on a nightly basis on the media side of it.
Well, what has impressed you, you know, coming from your perspective, what has impressed you the most about the Islanders' play? I mean, there's so many things you can say, but from your perspective, what has been, you know, the most pleasant surprise or the thing you weren't expecting from, you know, all the moves they made in the offseason and things you might have heard about the team?
I think it's probably the intangibles a little bit. I think last night? Did they play last night? Yes, they did. It's Sunday, right? Yeah. I'm like, what day is it? I think last night was a really good example. When the team is down and the minutes are ticking down, I have this feeling in my stomach like something's going to happen, like they're going to win the game. And it's just a hunch. And I think that the guys, if you talk to them, have that same feeling. Even when they're down, there's this sense of, okay, we're not going to panic. You know, we can do this. I've heard that from Kyle Loposo. I've heard it from Travis Hamonic. I think the first time I really had a sense that there was definitely a special feel around the team, other than putting together the pieces. Yes, the defense first mentality. Yes, you have to have your special teams clicking. You want guys healthy. Having Boychuk and Hamonic back is good. But Kyle Loposo said in one of the early games was that he could just feel something different in the dressing room. He could feel a connection. And I really do think that's a really close group of guys, which is kind of hard to do if you think about it with all the new faces they have in there. But I think they believe they can beat anybody in the league. And I think a big part of winning is not only what, you know, putting things together, but believing that you can do it.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's what I'm seeing.
I hear the same things. You know, I've read so many interviews and people that have been around the locker room, and they say the same thing. It's this team believes in itself.
Absolutely.
And they're also very close-knit as well. I mean, I've seen that in the locker room many times that, you know, these guys will go to war for each other, you know, and that like, gets infectious.
It is. And, you know, you saw, I mean, yeah, they lost three games about a week ago, but they did have people that were stepping up when they could. you know, and in a hockey season or with any sport for that matter, I mean, half the battle is being healthy and having your good players out there. But you know you're going to go through those stretches where a guy's going to pull something or tweak something and you're going to be short defenseman, you're going to be short key forward. And you have to be able to make up for that. You have to be able to trudge through and have everybody step up. And I think what you're seeing from, you know, the defense was really working. I think they were, you know, obviously down without Hamonic and Boychuk with that physical presence that they bring and kind of, you know, the confidence that they have out there. But if you look at the lines, you guys, I mean, it's unbelievable. Cappy just rolls them one after the other.
Yeah,
their fourth line out
there
is unreal. Next to any other fourth line, I put them up next to any other fourth line in the league, and I think they would come away on top.
That's exactly.
And, you know, you don't have to rely on, you know, John Tavares and Kyle Loposo or Franz Nielsen to get all of your offensive production.
Yeah, we were actually saying that in the first part of the show. We were saying, imagine what this team would be if, and again, we've been winning all these games, but if JT and Kyle were getting 100% of the points that we would expect them to get. I'm not saying they're going to be 200-point scorers, but if they were going at a little bit above a point-a-game pace like they were last year and the beginning part of this season, you know, what could this team even be like then?
Yeah, and I think, as you've seen in your test, scoring can be streaky. Sometimes you're going to have guys that are going to go out and it seems like they're scoring a goal every game, and sometimes it's going to feel like it's a little bit of a drought. I think it was good for John to get one yesterday, and I think you're going to see more production from him and Kyle. It's just a matter of time. And I think if we were having the same conversation in February, you could be saying the same thing, like, oh, you know, can Franz get something going, or why don't we see more from Grabo? But I think it's just sometimes it goes like that. And then you have to say, okay, good, but there's not as much pressure when you have the quote-unquote kid line going. When you have Brock Nelson and Anders Lee and Ryan Strome producing, sometimes for guys that can take off a little pressure so that they can, you know, tweak things or get back to their groove.
Shannon?
Yes?
Oh, I thought we lost you. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
You know, just a quick down a second. But what I was going to bring up now, you growing up in Detroit, or, you know, following the Red Wings as you did, you know, you've seen, with their cup wins, they've always had success and goal, whether it was Mike Vernon, and then obviously with Chris Osgood for the couple of years, and Dominic Hasek in the late 2000s. Do you see that same type of thing with Jaro Halak? I mean, God, we knew what he was capable of doing, you know, the year in Montreal that he single-handedly brought his team to the conference finals, the couple of years in St. Louis, he goes there 3 years and has the all-time record in shutouts, and now he comes here, and all of a sudden, it's just like he went into a second gear. Does it seem like it's almost like that Osgood-like effort and goal in the Detroit years that brought them to their cup glories?
You know, I don't like to describe, you know, to compare goalies like that because it is so early in the season. But when we saw Jaro on that stretch of whatever it was, 11 straight wins, I mean, when you're breaking Billy Smith's record for consecutive wins, granted, you know, he wasn't playing, you know, they were splitting seasons and it was a little bit different back in the 80s with guys in net. But, I mean, I think he has that kind of potential. And the biggest thing I think that I've seen from Jaro is just, it's almost like he's just taking a deep breath. You know, after that West Coast trip, he really kind of settled in. He's definitely, a guy that's kind of a calm, quiet leader in that dressing room. And when I watch him in net, he doesn't ever look frazzled. I mean, I'm expecting when Pavel Datsyuk is streaking towards you to see a little, you know, you could see a guy get a little out of sorts or a little uncomfortable. It doesn't matter who's coming at him. Stamkos or Datsyuk or whoever, it just seems like when he makes the saves, he's not frazzled. And I think that if he can remain confident and comfortable like that, that is obviously a big part of the team's success.
Absolutely. I have to ask you because it's always entertaining when I hear you when you're with Stan Fischler.
Oh my God! I love
How is that working with him? And you know, it's just the guy knows everything about hockey, and I'd love to spend even 15 minutes talking to him. But how is it working with him?
You know, the first time I met Stan, and Stan tells this story. The first time I met Stan was when I first came to New York for my first interview with MSG, and we were in the offices, and I was talking, to my bosses, and we're just chit-chatting, and they're like, why come here from Detroit, this and that. And I mentioned about, I knew Howie and Butch through the grapevine. I had heard great things about them. And I said, if I was going to make a change to go somewhere else, I wanted to really be surrounded by people who were going to help make me better, challenge me, and also had a great feel for the game. And I was like, Dan Fischler is a legend. Like, it's on my bucket list to meet with, you know, to meet him, to pick his brain. And they're like, hold on, hold on. So they, like, fill out of the office. They come back with Stan. Stan had been in the other office. And I'm standing there. I'm, like, literally shaking. Like, I want to hug him. I'm totally a hugger. And I'm like, I want to hug him, but I don't want to be creepy. So I'm, like, shaking his hand, and we're talking about Detroit, and I can't stop smiling. He's, like, written all these books about the Wings, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. So we're chatting, and then when I ended up getting the job, we started emailing back and forth even before the season started. He sent me some books. He helped me, you know, with some, you know, homework and stuff to get ready for the season. And it just felt like a very natural fit for, you know, a coworker. And I was coming from, you know, Detroit, where I had an analyst for the whole show. We did hour-long shows. So Chris Osgood that worked with me last year, as did Darren Elliott. My team Cleaves is someone I've worked with, and Craig Monroe. So I, you know, had worked with people before, but Stan is just a special person because he has so much knowledge. Like, I feel like he has an entire hockey encyclopedia in his brain.
I think so.
But he's so excited to share it with people. And that's the biggest thing. He never makes you feel like you should, oh, what do you mean you don't know, you know, who had the shutout, blah, blah, blah. It's like he's just so happy to share with you. And if you've ever met Stan, you know he loves telling jokes. So he keeps it light, you know. We're here to entertain and inform the viewers. And it has been a dream come true to work with him. It's been really, really fun.
Yeah, he actually brings props, too, which I love.
Oh, my gosh. I never know. Sometimes he doesn't even tell me. He just, like, pulls. I'm like, see, like, when he brought the Knish, and I felt so bad. I totally got blown up on Twitter. I didn't even know what Knish was. I was like, how do I? They're like, oh, this girl, obviously not from New York. Like, how does she not know what a Knish is?
But and when is he going to take you on a tour of all the subways?
Well, I've been doing my own homework. I've got the red line and the blue line down to visit my friends, but there are a whole lot of things going on the other side of the city, on the east side, that I'm completely lost. So we'll have to do that for sure. I'm waiting for that book. I'm sure he's just waiting for me to finish the Who's Who in Hockey Now, and then he's going to give me the subway book. And then we're going to move on to Brooklyn, because he knows all about Brooklyn, too.
Well, Shannon, to be totally truthful, I am in my 51st year of life, and I still don't know the subway line. So don't worry. You're not any far different than me. But last thing I want to bring up, again, you mentioned it, and we talked about it, and, you know, unfortunately, anybody that knows me and looks at my size knew it was much heavier in my 20s, 30s, and 40s. But when I was a teenager and going into college, I was a competitive swimmer. So when I heard you were too, I just had to ask. And it always is amazing when I find out, you know, when everybody thinks of college swimming, they think of either California, USC, UCLA. But I always find out that some of the best college swimming teams are in the Midwest, and you went to the University of Missouri. So
yes.
Just tell me a little bit about that. What was your specialty, and what was it about the sport that got you hooked?
I have been in love with swimming since I was – I mean, like, as soon as I could walk, I basically feel like I was a prune in the summer. I'd be in the pool. My mom couldn't get me out. I remember telling her when I was seven, I was like, Mom, there's swim tryouts at the Y. And she was like, no, we missed them. Because my mom had, you know, was a swimmer. She knew how much of work it was. She was like, no, we missed them. We're going to stick with soccer. And the next day I came home from school and I had a flyer. And I was like, Mom, we didn't miss it. the personality you see on TV, that was me as a 7 and 8 year old. I was like, no, we're going. And so I started swimming. And actually, I started swimming in Madison, Connecticut. Which is kind of, you know, just across the sound, swam New England Championships and was a sprinter and just kind of kept excelling at it, and eventually ended up actually being recruited out of high school. And my first year I went to University of Virginia, actually, and we won ACCs there my freshman year. It was a great experience. I loved the school. The team was fantastic. Great growing process. But I knew pretty much about the same time I started swimming that I also wanted to be in broadcasting, and I wanted to be a sports anchor and reporter, which not many kids at 8 years old know that, but I did. And I knew my best opportunity to get into that field was going to be at a great journalism school. And so I made the transfer to University of Missouri. I called the coach, and I had taken a recruiting trip, and I called the coach, and I go, I don't know if you remember me. He was like, I do. Get here. We have a scholarship. I was like, okay, great.
Nice. Very nice.
So I transferred to Mizzou, swam, you know, the rest of my eligibility out 3 years there. At that point, we were in the Big 12, which was fun. We had a great rivalry with University of Kansas and Nebraska, and University of Texas was really good at the time. And the team got better and better, and we were a top 25 program. They built a brand new pool, and now I'm proud to be an alum, and I get all these emails about how they're a top 10 program. They've got one of the best diving programs in the country, and, you know, it was a really good thing for me and helping me form that discipline to get up and do things on a routine. When you're used to being in a pool at 5 a.m., you know, everything else kind of seems easy.
Yeah, oh, that's great. So what was your specialty?
I was a sprinter. So
oh, okay, free, so 1,500
free? 5,300 free, swim a little bit, 100 back, did some relays. If I had to take more than, like, 4 or 5 breaths, I was not doing it. I literally, they used to joke with me, I could not swim breaststroke to save my life, and I would be so intense when I was swimming that I would lose count in a 200. For people that don't know what a 200, it's 8 laps. Like, come on. You know, you're 20 years old. You should be able to count. I would be doing backstroke. And the person, when I had, like, one more lap to go, would be, like, waving a towel behind because I would just be so into it that I would totally lose count. I probably would have done a flip turn and been, like, off or something. So, yeah, anything over 100, I was really not interested in at all.
No, that's cool. Well, listen, Shannon, we really thank you for coming on tonight. Again, wish you a very happy holiday season. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and all that.
Yeah,
and we'll definitely catch you on the pre- and post-game shows. And I know when I'm not covering a game, I'll definitely come down and say hello.
Yes, please do say hello. And to everybody out there, I hope you and your families have a wonderful holiday as well. And let's do this again sometime soon, guys. Thanks so much for having me on.
Absolutely, Shannon. Take care. Thanks again.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
All right. Okay, so that was Shannon Hogan from MSC. Great interview. Again, really, really sweet girl. And definitely, if you're on Twitter, she is at Shannon_Hogan. Definitely check her out. She has some great posts, some great insights, too, as she goes during the games, but in the pregames as well. So definitely.
She knows her hockey for sure. That's,
yeah, there
that's
is.
The thing. It was
there
impressive.
Is. Yep, absolutely is. Absolutely. So in about the 5 minutes we got left, you got any New Year's resolutions?
You're going to put me on the spot, huh?
Well, you know, first thing we can say is, you know, we're going to have to resolve to not automatically assume, well, we've been doing it, not automatically assuming that the team is going to lose a game in the third period when they're down one goal.
I just, you know, it's like a dream. I'm almost afraid to, like, really, and I think I've talked to a few people about this. It's like I keep saying, well, come to me in December and see how they're playing. Come to me in January and see how they're playing. Come to me in February. So I think if I got to make a resolution, I think I got to start really, truly believing in the team that I've followed for so long and actually start buying and drinking the Kool-Aid here.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, I mean, my thing is, you know, somebody says, you know, oh, you know, you have superstitions. Well, you know what my superstition is? I have no superstitions. So I don't, you know, I don't mind saying about the fact that they're doing so well and this and that. I don't jump on board and go absolutely crazy, but I'm very proud to say that they're doing so great, and I'm thinking that they're going to continue that off. But I mean, right now as it stands, the big test is, I mean, we were always saying big test, you know, when Chicago came in, when Tampa came in, when the Flyers came in. But to me, the big test is the next 10 days.
Right.
Once they start that, once they get rid of that Monday game against Washington, and they head on the road to Winnipeg and Calgary and Edmonton,
yeah,
and Vancouver,
that's where it really
counts. That, to me, that's make or break. They come out of that road trip, let's say 4-2-1, get 9 out of 14 points, I'm thrilled as fruit punch.
Right.
You know, because they have to show at that point that they mean business, and that'll get them to the definitely past the halfway point and get them to the 4 minutes. Okay. We'll get to the All-Star game. At least.
And great shape.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, not that they're going to get anybody in the All-Star game, because it seems like the entire country of Latvia is voting that guy Gerdinson's from the Buffalo Sabres in.
Yeah.
You know,
What is that all about?
I think the president promised them like a farm and a car if they vote 10 times for this kid.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, the kid's having a good season. You know, for him, he's building up, and kudos to Ted Nolan and Brian Trottier for the great job that they're doing, bringing that team back from the doldrums that they had in October. So, but to get this guy in the All-Star team, geez, Louise, and you know, nice to see Sidney Crosby come back from his little stint with the mumps.
And that's now, right. He did come back.
He came back and played last night, and you know, you see that. You know, some of the Ranger guys, they're back. Actually, one came back. The other one just went out. Or the Hartford coach, I think, is out now. So that's pretty interesting, you know, with that, you know, that mumps thing. And the Islanders actually canceled their visit with the kids just in case. I mean, supposedly they all were vaccinated. They all have been taken care of. But, you know, they just want to make sure. So anyway, to everybody listening, we want to wish everybody if you are celebrating Hanukkah, enjoy the rest of your Hanukkah this week. I know it ends on Christmas Eve. To all our Christian friends, have a great, great Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa. All that holidays put together. And, again, to 2015, John, we made another year.
That's it. We did.
Yep. And if you want to, again, check us out on Twitter. My handle is at G Harding WGBB. I changed my Twitter handle. John's is at Hockey Blindside. And we also still blog. We do, actually, John and I now do audio blogs at islestalk.com. And again, you can also check out at Sports Talk 1240 to make sure you're getting the latest info. This interview will be up to, or this show will be up tomorrow morning. Make sure you continue listening in the 9 o'clock hour, because Jake is coming on with Rob Carpenter, a former Jets wide receiver, in studio, and they're going to have Kenny Anderson, the former Net and Boston Celtic, come on. That should be a great interview coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. So, Brian, thank you very much for this great year helping out on the behind the boards.
As always,
yes, he is the best, and he's helped us out tremendously, getting me through my times where I can't get my face in front of the microphone correctly, and you know, helping John out too. You know, he's been, you know, making us not, well, we're not professionals, but we're definitely improving, right, Brian?
Like,
you can nod your head yes. Thank you very much. But anyway, John, thank you as always for coming on.
You know it's
been a fun ride. It's been a great ride, and I'm looking forward to a lot more fun time to talk. And we definitely have to keep busting on Derek's shoes, that Ranger fan that he is. John Sweeney, I know you're listening. Make sure you keep rubbing it in onto him. Who is the second best team in New York, and who is the first best team in New York?
That's right,
John?
That's right.
So again, for John Panarese and John's brother Joe, who is always here in the studio, thank you, sir, for bringing John in. I appreciate it. And again, we thank Shannon Hogan and Mike Doc Emmerich for coming and joining us next week. I am hoping, if I play the cards right, that we might get Mr. Stan Fischler
in here next show.
I believe our next show is on the 18th of January, which would be the day before Martin Luther King Day. So definitely check out the schedule on sportstalk1240.com. And we definitely wish you and yours a very happy Christmas holiday. And we figured we'd end this with that little sound that comes on every time that the New York Islanders light the lamp, baby. So, again, for John and Gary, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and we'll see you soon. Make sure you check in Jake Brown's show coming on next on Sports Talk 1240 WGBB.
Necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.